The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jory Slodke for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Discover. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the January-February 2024 issue. We continue our cover story, The State of Science 2024. The Year of the AI Conversation. Generative AI tools have unleashed a new world of promise and pitfalls. By early 2023, large language models, or LLMs, were taking the world by storm. Arguably, ChatGPT led the revolution. The interactive chatbot allows users to make comments, ask questions, make requests, or enter into dialogue with the computer program. It is a kind of generative AI, which means that after training on enormous stores of data, it can produce something new and reads fairly convincingly and eerily as though it were created by a human. Despite its ability to mimic human verbiage, ChatGPT was trained to do a straightforward job, use probability and training data to predict the next text that follows a sequence of words. That ability could make it useful for people who work with text, says computer scientist Mark Finlayson of Florida International University. It's very good at generating generic middle school level English, and that's a good starting point for 80% of what people write in their day-to-day lives, he says. By the end of January, barely 2 months after its online debut, ChatGPT had racked up 100 million users, according to analysts at the financial firm UBS. That caught everyone, including OpenAI, the company behind the technology, by surprise. "We really underestimated the impact it would have," says Andrew Main, who helped test ChatGPT and develop applications at OpenAI. For comparison, that user milestone was crossed by the social media platform TikTok after 9 months, and Twitter, now X, required more than 5 years. ChatGPT broke the record, but it was broken in turn by Threads, a social media program to rival Twitter, which in July gained 100 million users in only 5 days. What were those users doing with this new AI tool? Anything they could think of. Unethical college students wrote papers, while aspiring creators solicited the program to generate song lyrics, poems, recipes, short stories, and fan fiction. ChatGPT also demonstrated unexpected talents, such as solving math problems, though not always correctly, writing computer code, and other abilities that seem to have little to do with its training data. "We started to see it doing things that we did not explicitly train it to do," says Main. ChatGPT produces text, but other generative AI tools produce music, images, videos, or other media, the source of much misinformation, mischief, and trouble. AI is not always trustworthy. These programs can produce nonsensical or factually inaccurate statements or images that are nonetheless packaged in a convincing way. They can also amplify inequalities and societal or racial biases from the training data, or generate art or music that imitates a human creator and may be shared wittingly or unwittingly by tens of millions of people online. Last February, Google unveiled its own chatbot called Bard, but in its first public demonstration, it made an embarrassing factual mistake. It reported that the James Webb Space Telescope had captured the first image of an exoplanet, but that feat was achieved in 2004 by the Very Large Telescope. In April, an earworm called Heart on My Sleeve began to circulate online, reported to be a collaboration between the musicians Drake and The Weeknd. Except that it wasn't. Heart on My Sleeve was a musical deepfake. An anonymous creator trained a generative AI program to convincingly mimic the singers. With so many applications and opportunities for error, the rise of these tools has ignited interest, debate, anxiety, and excitement. For the first time, you can really talk to a computer, says Bill Marcellino, a sociolinguist and behavioral scientist at the RAND Corporation, the research organization and think tank based in Santa Monica, California. That's radical. The quest to build an AI system dates back to at least the 1960s and a system called ELIZA, designed by Joseph Weizenbaum, a computer science pioneer at MIT. It was a kind of mechanical therapist that used keywords from a user's input to generate responses, but it gave the appearance of carrying on an informal conversation. It was the type of program, maybe the first of its kind, that could even attempt the Turing test. Named for Alan Turing, the computer science pioneer, the test is a way to gauge the capabilities of an AI system. If the person conversing with the system can't tell if it's a human or a machine, then the system passes. ELIZA didn't. Experts disagree on whether more recent AI tools like ChatGPT pass the test, or whether the Turing test even remains a useful metric. LLMs have the ability to do something that looks like reasoning, Marcellino says, but that's not the same as human thinking. I don't want to make claims about actual intelligence. Importantly, ELIZA was rule-based, which means it responded mechanically to the user's input. The newer LLMs don't follow a set of rules, but instead analyze prior patterns to offer probabilities for how to predict new text or images or music. Generative AI programs are typically based on artificial neural networks, which analyze data and find connections among inputs, which words often appear together, for example. They took a major leap forward in 2017 when Google unveiled the Transformer, a kind of neural network approach that can quickly identify patterns and connections between individual inputs. For example, it looks for ways that every word in a text connects to every other word within a certain input length. The Transformer revolutionized language models. It enabled them to quickly find connections between words in enormous datasets. ChatGPT was originally powered by GPT 3.5, an LLM that trained on a dataset that included text from books, articles, and the internet, totaling an estimated 300 billion words. GPT-4, which was released in March, performed even better. One metric, when ChatGPT took the Uniform Bar Exam, the knowledge test of those seeking a license to practice law, the model scored in the lowest 10% of scores. When GPT-4 took the test, it reached the top 10%. The field is continuing to evolve, says Marcellino. Researchers are looking for ways to build smaller, more nimble models that harness the potential of ChatGPT, applying the tool to medicine, the military, and more. He and his team, for example, have built a chatbot for use with the lingo of the U.S. Army. The potential good that could come from generative AI programs is matched and often overshadowed by the increased risks to everything from security to copyright infringement, from identity theft to national security. Those threats already exist. The question is whether LLMs could increase their reach. More regulation could help. Healthcare researchers have called for increased government oversight, for example, to ensure that the use of LLMs does not cause harm and that it protects the privacy of patient data. Finlayson predicts that these tools will boost efficiency among workers, but doesn't think they'll obviate the need for humans, at least in most fields. ChatGPT has no sense of what's right or wrong, what's correct or factual. It's not anchored to the real world, he says. It's moving very quickly, and human ingenuity continues to be needed in very serious ways to address these problems that have developed. I think we will rise to that challenge. After OceanGate, a widely publicized deep-sea excursion leaves five dead, raising big questions for ocean exploration. For several days in June, millions around the globe were gripped by news of five people missing 12,500 feet under the ocean, lost while attempting to catch a glimpse of the wreckage of the RMS Titanic. By the time evidence confirmed that their poorly designed submersible, the Titan, had imploded under immense pressure of the deep, their fate was hardly a surprise. Following the disaster, information came to light that the Titan did not meet industry safety standards. The carbon fiber cylinder making up the Titan's hull was known to be inappropriate for deep sea craft, and OceanGate, the company that developed and operated the submersible, had a history of safety-related allegations. Interview footage resurfaced of OceanGate CEO Stockton Rush, who was aboard at the time and died in the disaster, boasting of breaking rules in the name of innovation. In addition, a group of professionals in the field had drafted a letter warning of safety concerns in 2018. Because of the rogue nature of the expedition, deep sea experts don't expect to see regulatory changes in the industry, nor do researchers expect new hurdles with funding, as properly certified research vessels remain safe. Since 1968, the American Bureau of Shipping, or ABS, has maintained a set of guidelines today known as the Rules for Building and Classing Underwater Vehicles, Systems, and Hyperbaric Facilities, or the Underwater Rules, for short, which outline standards for design and construction of manned submersibles. Additional agencies offer standards and certifications in other parts of the world as well. The rules have been working quite well for 50 years, says Tony Lawson, engineering director at Dewar Maine, which makes submersibles. Many of the areas OceanGate was supposedly pushing tech are all areas that were investigated in the 70s and 80s. Those findings seem to have been ignored. Lawson sits on the ABS Underwater Vehicle Systems Subcommittee, which will likely meet next in spring 2024. Such safety measures helped Don Wright, chief scientist for the Environmental Systems Research Institute, or ESRI, reach the deepest point on Earth, Challenger Deep in the Mariana Trench, in July 2022. The oceanographer's voyage was in the submersible Limiting Factor, whose hull is a titanium sphere. I had absolutely no fear, no qualms, no worries at all because of what the crew had done to ensure that the craft was safe, Wright says. Despite the impressive safety record of deep sea exploration, prior to June, only a handful of deaths have occurred over seven decades and countless dives. The catastrophe has certainly marred public perceptions of the field. One of the collateral tragedies of this terrible event is that people may be afraid to go too deep in the ocean, said Sylvia Earle, oceanographer and deep sea explorer, in an online discussion on June 26th. We need to know what's down there, who's down there, and how does it all connect with life on the surface. Wright is hopeful OceanGate won't set back deep sea exploration, including one of her current projects, Seabed 2030. ESRI is working with dozens of partners on the UN-endorsed program to map the entire ocean seafloor in the next 6 years. It's a lofty goal given that modern maps are only 25% filled in, but an important step towards understanding our oceans. Wright hopes to see more data contributions, not just from typical research submersibles, but from dropships and any craft traveling the ocean that's equipped to map the seafloor. We need all the data we can get, she says. Monotile mania. An unexpectedly simple Einstein tile settles a decades-old math conundrum. In March 2023, researchers introduced the world's first aperiodic monotile, a 13-sided polygon that vaguely resembles a hat or a t-shirt, depending on who you ask. The shape answers a question that has haunted mathematicians for nearly 60 years. Can an infinite number of copies of a single shape fit together to cover a plane without gaps and without repeating the same pattern? This tile can. So can a related polygon, shaped more like a turtle, introduced in the same paper. And so can a ghost-shaped tile that debuted in May. The Spectre, as one of its discoverers named it, goes even further. Unlike the other two, it doesn't require mirror images of itself to cover the plane. Before the hat-shaped tile, it wasn't clear whether an aperiodic monotile could exist. In 1966, mathematician Robert Berger described a set of 20,426 tiles that could aperiodically cover a plane. In the 1970s, Sir Roger Penrose brought that number down to a few pairs, most notably in shapes called a kite and a dart, but whether one tile would suffice remained a mathematical mystery. Undecidable questions are everywhere in mathematics, says mathematician Chaim Goodman Strauss of the National Museum of Mathematics in New York City. If such a tile existed, mathematicians didn't know what it might look like, but some expected it to be impossibly complicated. I thought it would be some fractally mess, says computer scientist and mathematical artist Craig Kaplan of the University of Waterloo in Ontario. But it turns out to be this comically boring shape. The hat was the brainchild of David Smith, a retired print technician in England with a deep interest in shapes that could cover a two-dimensional surface. He had been experimenting with polykites, shapes built from multiple kites, and stumbled across a configuration that resisted forming periodic patterns, no matter how he arranged them. He reached out to Kaplan, whom he had met in online discussions about tiling the plane. Kaplan plugged the new shape into a computer program that suggested tiling was possible, but it was not mathematically rigorous. My software doesn't provide any kind of proof, he says. It provides evidence. The duo brought in Goodman Strauss and Joseph Myers, a mathematician and software engineer, to hammer out proofs for both the hat and the turtle, another of Smith's creations. Myers found connections between them that led to the discovery of a continuum of Einsteins, German for one stone, a clever name for the monotiles. Smith hadn't found one, he'd found infinitely many. The hat and the turtle required mirror reflections to tile the plane, which could arguably be treated as two independent tiles. Then in May, the collaborators unveiled the Spectre, named by Smith, sometimes called a vampire, which worked alone and, like the bloodthirsty creature, has no reflections. The researchers plan to continue computational explorations of these forms, both to find new ones and to explore the phenomenon of aperiodicity. If there's an underlying phenomenon that leaks these things, we know nothing, Kaplan says. Maybe there's a way to look at it that we don't yet understand. Lost letters of Mary, Queen of Scots, found and deciphered. How a computer scientist, a patent expert, and a musician cracked the historic code. Almost 3 years ago, an amateur codebreaker named Satoshi Tomokiyo discovered a cache of dozens of encrypted letters in the digital collection of the National Library of France, all dating to the 16th century. He posted them to his cryptology website, Cryptiana, under the heading Unsolved Historical Ciphers. In February of 2023, Tomokiyo and codebreaker George Lasry, together with German musician Norbert Biermann, announced that they had deciphered the documents and unmasked the author as Mary, Queen of Scots. The former monarch wrote the letters over a six-year period of her life while imprisoned by her distant cousin, Queen Elizabeth I. The letters reveal insights about Mary's life in captivity. "We see her very active, well-connected, and astute," says Lasry. Historians quickly hailed the discovery, which totaled 50,000 words, as a significant new find in the life of the deposed queen, who was beheaded at the behest of her cousin in 1587. The three researchers came from different backgrounds. Lasry is a computer scientist who applies his programming skills to cracking codes and works with Decrypt, a multi-institutional decryption effort. Tomokiyo, a patent expert who also studied astrophysics, focuses on historical documents in his cryptography work. And Biermann is a musician and opera arranger in Berlin with a penchant for solving hard-to-break codes in his spare time. The letters were written in a homophonic cipher, which means common characters may be resembled or represented by multiple symbols. Mastery began by working solo using a hill climber algorithm, incrementally testing random keys to tackle the codes. "I got stuck and I decided to contact the two best," he says, explaining how Tomokiyo and Biermann joined him. As new clues emerged, Tomokiyo also unearthed an additional 28 previously unknown letters. The mysterious author used the feminine forms of words to refer to herself, and she mentioned freedom and my son. The smoking gun, Lasry says, came when they identified the name Walsingham. Sir Francis Walsingham was spymaster and secretary to Queen Elizabeth I. "When we saw that, we were more or less convinced," Lasry says. The team consulted with historians and found that 7 of the 57 letters also existed in plain text versions and were known to historians, but the rest were new. Since the publication, Lasry says the group has cracked a few other historical ciphers, but none of them are as sensational as Mary, Queen of Scots. Mummy Making Unwrapped. An analysis of ancient pots has revealed the complex chemistry and rare ingredients involved in Egyptian mummification. Around 2600 years ago, a small ceramic bowl sat in a subterranean workshop. Carrying hints of cedar and honey, the bowl was used by Egyptian embalmers to blend essential oils and beeswax for the multi-month process that transformed corpses into mummies. Reciting incantations, removing organs, and applying substances that made bodies dry, fragrant, and microbe-free, the embalmers employed a multifaceted set of skills. They knew the ritual practices, but also a kind of chemistry, says Maxime Rajot, a biomolecular archaeologist at the University of Tübingen in Germany. Over the past 4 years, Rajot and colleagues have gained unprecedented insights into the substances and steps involved in ancient Egyptian mummy making. Their analysis of molecules trapped in pottery, as published in Nature in a Nature paper from February 2023, revealed that embalmers sourced ingredients from surprisingly far-flung lands for their specific biomolecular properties. The Egyptians perfected the practice of mummification over the course of several thousand years, transforming the natural desiccation of bodies into a sophisticated ritual and chemical process between the 5th and 1st millenniums BCE. During the time of the pharaohs, professionals spent up to 70 days transforming a tender corpse into a linen-wrapped, afterlife-ready mummy, treating it with spells and prayers, as well as substances that mitigated moisture, bacteria, fungi, and stink. But scholars have long debated how to translate the ingredients named in ancient inscriptions and papyri, meaning that much of the mummy recipe has remained a mystery. And while some ingredients have been identified from the molecular analyses of mummies from museums around the world, these methods cannot reveal how specific substances figured into the mummification process, whether they were applied to the bandages or the head, for instance, or the purpose of preserving tissues or fending off bacteria. The possibility of linking substances and steps arrived in 2018 when the late archaeologist Ramadan Hussein invited Rajot to join his excavations at Saqqara, an ancient city about 12 miles south of Cairo. There, Hussein's team had uncovered an ancient facility for treating and storing corpses, dated to around 664 to 525 BCE. Featuring a workshop more than 40 feet underground, the facility held over 100 pottery vessels bearing instructions like to make the odor pleasant, for making beautiful the skin, and head, boil. Selecting 31 of these pots for closer analysis, Rajot set out to identify their long-lost contents. But because Egypt lacked a specialized laboratory for this kind of work, he and his team brought the pots into a local food chemistry lab, which they converted into one of the country's only facilities for analyzing ancient biomolecules. Drilling pinches of clay powder from the pots' interiors and analyzing the powder in the lab's mass spectrometer, they determined which ancient molecules had seeped into the pottery's pores. The successful analysis of the pots revealed embalmers used diverse and exotic materials that could curb moisture, smells, and mummy-munching organisms. Bitumen tar, probably from the Dead Sea, pistachio, juniper, and olive oils from the Mediterranean, and tree resins from the tropical forests of Asia and possibly sub-Saharan Africa. To source these items, the embalmers relied on trade that spanned much of their known world. The diversity of bioproducts which were used, Rajot says, was really impressive. Now that the Egyptian lab exists, the researchers plan to analyze mummy-making ingredients from more sites. Their hope is to trace how mummification transformed across time and space, applying modern chemical methods to unravel their ancient counterparts. AI mind reading. Artificial intelligence tools like ChatGPT and Midjourney have become notorious for creating text and visuals according to our direct commands. Next up, reconstructing our thoughts. Here's a short story. I got up from the air mattress and pressed my face against the glass of the bedroom window, expecting to see eyes staring back at me, but instead finding only darkness. Now here's another. I just continued to walk up to the window and open the glass. I stood on my toes and peered out. I didn't see anything and looked up again and I saw nothing. The first is a snippet that a person heard while in a functional magnetic resonance imaging machine, or fMRI, which measures blood flow in the brain. The second is what artificial intelligence, or AI, recreated based on that brain activity. In a study published in May 2023 in Nature Neuroscience, a team of researchers from the University of Texas at Austin showed that an AI decoder could translate the words people heard while listening to podcasts and the images people saw while watching silent movies. Matching specific patterns of brain activities to specific phrases, the AI was trained on three people as they consumed 16 hours of storytelling. From that learning, the technology could decode the thoughts of someone imagining a story in their head, says neuroscientist and senior study author Alexander Huth, though its accuracy was greatly reduced for individuals who were not involved in its training. According to the team, the AI could one day be used to assist stroke patients and others who have lost the ability to speak by converting their brain activity into words. And the team's decoder isn't alone in its mind-reading applications. In March, researchers from Osaka University reported that they had developed a similar model dubbed stable diffusion that reconstructs images from fMRI scans. If it feels invasive, researchers stress that it's unlikely AI will be able to read your mind without your consent anytime soon. The current technology is still very far removed from a general-purpose mind-reading device, says Iris Groen, a neuroscientist at the Informatics Institute at the University of Amsterdam, not involved in the new work. Both approaches require participants to spend hours in fMRI scanners, and the University of Texas AI can make mistakes, spouting gibberish if a person thinks unrelated thoughts. And researchers are still prioritizing the privacy of our internal imagings, given this pace of AI's progress. The brain contains extremely sensitive personal information, says Yu Takagi, a neuroscientist involved in the stable diffusion project. It should not be subjected to any form of analysis without informed consent. Over-the-counter birth control. In July, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration approved Norgestrel, commonly called Opill, as the first daily oral contraceptive that can be obtained without a prescription. Health advocates hail the move as a step forward, reducing the nearly 3 million unintended pregnancies estimated to occur in the U.S. each year, as it eliminates the need to visit a healthcare provider before obtaining the progesterone-only pill. We've run out of time for today's episode of Discover. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jory Slodke, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Discover is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call area code 919-832-5138. That number again is area code 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.